We got Professor Steve. He's on hold, and we'll get to him in just a couple minutes. We do have a caller from the last hour we didn't get to when James was talking about the filters. Important, ladies and gentlemen, check out those water filters. A whole house, that's important, especially, you know, if you don't want to be like a Flint, Michigan or something like that. So check that out at his website, or you can call us and find out more information about it. But we have Winnie in Ohio. Winnie in Ohio, you're live on the air. I know you've got something on your mind. You always do. It's always good to hear from you. Welcome.
Okay, thank you. And we're glad to have you back, Daniel. We're glad you didn't forget about your radio family.
I will never, Winnie, I will never forget about my radio family. Never. Whether I'm here or not,
I
never forget about you.
Okay, good. That's good to hear. No, I just have a comment about the first thing you were talking about in the first hour. People need to, when you're thinking about things, you know, we like President Trump for what he was doing with the abortion issue and saving life and things like that. And that was all wonderful and good because that's what all of us stand for. But who brought on the vaccine? Who's the one that gave us the vaccine? You know, you've got to think about that.
You're making a good point.
I mean, I don't know. Are they playing both sides of the fence here?
I would lean that way.
I don't know. You've got to ask yourself a question.
There's a very important interview with Catherine Austin Fitz. It's called Planet Locked. You can search this, Planet Lockdown, Catherine Austin Fitz full interview. You can't find it on YouTube.
Okay.
All you can find is like little 1 minute segments. This is the best interview I have ever heard on kind of what you're talking about and other things and kind of putting it together. I've ever heard, ever. It's about 40 minutes. I've listened to it 3 times. And you know how I don't listen to when people send me some 40-minute video, I never listen to it. Never. I've listened to this video 3 times. Catherine Austin Fitz, Planet Lockdown full interview. You can get it. You're going to have to get it online, not on YouTube. And so it's a web. I can't even remember the website. But she talks about that, about the control team and about the vaccines and about all this. And Trump, she doesn't mention Trump by name, but she talks about Trump. You'll see. And it's fascinating, and it's the best interview. You know how I love Catherine Austin Fitz. This is the best interview on the subject I've ever, ever heard, ever. So I encourage everybody to check that out.
Okay, thank you.
Any other comment, Winnie?
No, just everybody keep hanging in there. God's taking care of all of us, but we have to stand. We've got to stand. Don't let them run over you. You stand.
That's right. You have no. You
God
have no.
God bless you and stay.
Thank you, Winnie. God bless you.
Yes.
We have no other alternative but to stand, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, you have no other alternative. I have said this 100 times, 5 years ago. It doesn't seem like it. It's getting more obvious. You have no other alternative but to stand for the truth. And that doesn't matter if it's, you know, medical, or that doesn't matter if it's, you know, in colleges and information. And that's our next guest, Steve Bias. He's a professor at Randall University out of Oklahoma. Teaches constitutional law. Love constitutional lawyers. Love talking to them. He's written a book called History's Greatest Libels. Very interesting. He's written an article, The New American. America did not invent slavery. It ended slavery. A very important subject. We're very happy to have him on. Steve Bias, welcome to the Power Hour.
Well, thank you for having me on today. I appreciate it.
Yeah, very. Well, let's start. You know, I don't know where you want to start, but if we listen to Black Lives Matter, the 1619 Project, America started in 1619 when the first black slaves came over here, and never mind the other white slaves that were before it. Let's forget about them. But that's where America started, and we're racist, and we're evil, and we need to crucify Thomas Jefferson, and we all need to have a new America, I guess. I don't know. I'm summarizing. You fill in or start wherever you want this discussion about slavery.
Well, I guess we'll start with the 1619 Project, and it's like so many other things, you know, distortions of American history by the progressive left. I don't really like to call them liberals. You know, they kind of stole that word in the 20s and so forth, but But anyway, it's all the purpose of this is to say that the founding of the country was corrupt, and therefore, since the founding of the country was corrupt, and that the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, all this stuff was all designed to promote slavery, then we need to have a new constitution, you know, a new form of government. So you go back to 1619, and their central thesis is that slavery originated in America, and America had it longer than anybody else, and we were one of the last people to end it, and every institution is infected with it. But what happened in 1619 was that slavery was it was illegal in Virginia. Essentially, they did have what was called indentured servants, and these were contracts that you signed. You could come over from England, and you had the hope in the future that you'd be finished with the contract after a few years. And at the termination of it, you would be not only free from the contract, but you would have some land. Well, when these, what happened was this ship arrives in Jamestown, and these pirates had captured this ship, and essentially, and they had the cargo, which included slaves from Africa. Now, one thing that's really important to note is that they were slaves in Africa. Now, who enslaved them was other African tribes, which is one of the biggest ways people became slaves in history, was they were on the losing side of a war. And so instead of killing them, which they did oftentimes, prisoners, they make slaves out of them. So these people were not made slaves in America. They were slaves in Africa. And so they were on these slave ships going to, I think, Portugal's, I'm not sure on that off the top of my head, but, and so these people got them, and so they traded them for food and repairs to their ship and different things. Now, since it wasn't legal to have slavery, there was no protection in law for that institution. They made them indentured servants, like the white indentured servants that were quite a few of them in Virginia. And so we don't know exactly what happened to these people, this initial group. But the end of the story is that were they still alive at the end of the contract, they were freed. So I would say indentured servanthood is not a pleasant experience. I wouldn't want to have that, but at the same time, it's better than slavery. And so that was the situation for the first couple of generations, really, there in Virginia, is that blacks that came from Africa were indentured servants. They weren't slaves. And some of them actually got freed and became owners of indentured, not owners, but had indentured servants of their own. And so that was the situation for a long time. So it's just a lie to say that slavery originated in America in 1619, as the 1619 Project supposes.
Why, you know, I can come up with my own conclusions. Why do you think that things that are so obvious to fact check, or they're just flat out lying about it? Do they think we're that stupid, or maybe we are? I don't know. Why are they so bold in their falsehoods?
Well, it's kind of one of those things that they control all the media, major media outlets, and they control academia, and they control the entertainment world, and they can even control much of corporate America now, are people with this same mindset and attitude. So, you know, they just figure that their voices are more more of them. They're louder. And our voices are not as loud. And so here I write this in the New American Magazine. You talk about it on the radio. But, you know, when you're up against all these forces out there that they figure they can just drown us out, and they have a goal, and the goal is to transform the United States into a socialist or Marxist, whatever you want to call it, you know, society. And they figure that they're going to be one of the people in power, you know, when that happens. And they're not really... You know, even the people that are really pushing this, you know, they're not really wanting to have a workers' paradise or anything like that. You know, it wasn't a workers' paradise in the Soviet Union, you know.
Far from
they
it.
Never do communism right. Have you ever noticed that? It's socialism. Well, they're never doing it right, you know. And I heard yeah. Venezuela was now the poorest nation in the Western Hemisphere. They've surpassed Haiti. And I said, well, like my response when I heard that was, I said, well, another country just doesn't know how to do socialism.
You
know?
you
all did it wrong, you know.
You mentioned earlier, you mentioned the word liberal. You said you wouldn't call them liberals because they stole that word.
Yeah.
You know, Thomas Jefferson was a liberal. You know, you want to talk about classical liberal,
yes.
That's Thomas Jefferson. What word would you use to describe people of these ilk? If not liberal, what word would you use?
Well, you know, secular progressive describes most of them. You know, the progressives, they're not liberal in the sense that, you know, live and let live, or, you know, let freedom of speech and religion and that sort of thing. They're very illiberal in that they want to impose their views on the rest of society. They don't believe in freedom of speech. You know, they don't like, they want to keep certain opinions off certain platforms. They don't want certain books to be published even. Now a liberal would be somebody like Alan Dershowitz, you know. He's not a progressive. He would be a liberal. Now, I don't agree with him on most of things. But he does believe in, you know, other people being able to express themselves and so on.
Let me phrase the question where I want to go. I'll phrase it this way. If Thomas Jefferson was posed with the idea of what you said at the beginning, that, hey, the foundation of our country is flawed, it's rooted in slavery and evil, and the Declaration of Independence and Constitution is an oppressive document, we need to get rid of it, what would Thomas Jefferson say to people who would come at him that way?
Well, I would say that he would say, along with the rest of the founding generation, I would say... all of them just about looked at slavery as something that was antithetical to the founding of the country, and they believed at that time that it was something that would just eventually go away, you know, that as the economy changed it would stop, but I think probably that's what he would say. And, of course, they didn't foresee the effect of the cotton gin and, you know, the expansion after the Louisiana Purchase, and which expanded not only cotton but also slavery and that sort of thing. You have to look at the time when Jefferson was an opponent of slavery, even though he owned slaves. No, he was born into that situation, and that was what he knew. He would not look upon slavery as the founding of the country. He would look upon the founding of the country was what was the ideas was what was going to get rid of slavery, because America did lead the world in that.
What would
there's no doubt about it.
What would he? I think that's an important point. Let's get to that. What would he say? Because it quickly seems to turn, I'm getting a little off subject, but I think it's all related. It seems to turn quickly from slavery was evil to, well, the Constitution is awful. We need to get rid of it and get something else. And then you forget about slavery pretty soon. Well, we need something else. What would he say about this rush to erase the Declaration of Independence and erase the Constitution, independent of the slavery issue? What do you think Thomas Jefferson would say when people want to eliminate the Declaration of Independence?
Well, of course, he was the principal author of the Declaration of Independence, and it was founded on those concepts that government was created for the purpose of protecting our life and our liberty and our property. And so, you know, he would probably be dumbfounded that people want to get rid of liberty. I remember that Ron Paul, in his farewell address at Congress, he said, "I just don't understand why liberty is such a hard sell." But it is an interesting thing, you know, that people are opposed to liberty, and Jefferson would have been, I'm sure, and the other framers, you know, the other founders, they would have all just been shocked that people didn't believe in this stuff, because that was just kind of the prevailing mood at the time.
Why the argument on the other side, if I was going to play devil's advocate, the argument is, well, they didn't end slavery, they continued it. Why, if this was so true, if rights were so important, why didn't they just end slavery?
We can, you know, we could approach that in several different ways. And one is that what was beginning to happen in colonial times, they couldn't just end slavery because they were under the control of the British Empire. For example, Georgia was established in 1732 or 3.
Three, yeah.
As, without... General Oglethorpe, without slavery, it was illegal. And 20 years later or so, the king revoked their charter and instituted slavery in Georgia Colony. In Virginia, I think there was two times that the Virginia Assembly voted to end the institution of slavery, and it was basically vetoed by the British government. They weren't going to have it, and so the first opportunity that they had shortly after the war for independence was won, many states began to abolish the institution of slavery. Vermont was kind of like an independent republic for a few years. It did it, and then we go to, you know, places like Connecticut and Pennsylvania and Massachusetts. Now, when you get down into places like Virginia, where it was more prominent and important to the economy, let's just take the example of Thomas Jefferson. Why is it? Here's a guy that was an open advocate of abolition of slavery, and yet he owned slaves. One of the problems that Jefferson had and a lot of plantation owners had at that particular time is they may have been living pretty good lifestyles for the day, but they were chronically in debt. And so the people that they were in debt to, let's say Jefferson had said, "Okay, I'm just going to free my slaves." Well, he couldn't do that because they were part of the mortgage, so to speak.
Their property. They were looked as property. Yeah.
Yeah, they were part of the estate, so they would have just been auctioned off to someone else. He didn't have, and a lot, you know, people like George Washington, he was able to free his slaves because he wasn't in debt. But people like Jefferson, and I kind of sympathize with Jefferson on one of the things that got him in debt is he liked to buy books. And I have a lot of books, you know, and everything. And so he was, even though he believed in public frugality, you know, the government living within its means, he really wasn't that good of money manager. You know, he was, by the time of his death, he was basically economically destitute. And he was just allowed to live in his home until his death, and then his creditors got his home and all that sort of thing. But a lot of people, they just simply couldn't do it in places like Virginia. But in those places where slavery was not as, I guess sort of like getting cream out of the coffee in the South, you know.
Yeah.
In the North, it was much easier. And so inspired by the American Revolution, several states began to abolish slavery, some overnight, some over a period of time, and so on.
I love that you called the American Revolution, or what most people call the revolution, you called it the War for Independence. I love that. Do you call the Civil War the War of Northern Aggression, as you should also?
Well, sometimes I do, and so on. The war, you know, people have called it different things. You know, the war between the states and the war for Southern independence. I think probably either the war of Northern aggression or the war for Southern independence would probably be more accurate.
Yeah.
You know, because it wasn't a civil war in the sense of
No, not at all.
The Southern states weren't trying to control the United States government. They were just trying to be separate, sort of like the colonies wanted to be separate from the British Empire, you know, and I teach the War for Independence. I call it when America seceded from the British Empire, you know, because that's what they did. They seceded, and of course today secession has a pretty
negative connotation.
You know, negative connotation, but it depends on what you're seceding from. You know, if you're seceding from tyranny, then it's a good thing.
We're coming on a break. The music's about to start. On the other side, I want to go back maybe in a little bit of history of slavery. It seems to me, from what I've studied, America mostly was resistant to slavery, and it was almost, I mean, for lack of a better word, it was almost forced upon them by the British. Let's talk about that,
yeah.
And then we'll, you know, this idea that America really ended slavery. And blah, 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 and the Civil War, the War of Northern Aggression up until then. It's an important topic, though. I think we get this straight. It's very good to have Steve. You're listening to the Power Hour. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like Strauss Heart Drops, North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, New Man of food storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
The Power Hour has been in existence since the turn of the 21st century. It is more critical than ever for you to sign up for our free newsletter and our breaking news. Simply text the word Power Hour to 22828 on your mobile phone, or sign up when you visit thepowerhour.com. Our website again is thepowerhour.com, or text Power Hour to 22828. Together, our legacy will live on for centuries.
You know what my mission was when I started this, and I was so excited. I still am excited after 21 years. I said, anybody who's got mouth must use Vitamir toothpaste and mouthwash if they want to stay healthy. I'm going to make sure that it is available to anywhere I can put the product.
You got a lot of zinc in these products.
Zinc inhibits plaque growth. Zinc is also known to have an antibacterial properties. Also, zinc works to eliminate bad breath by destroying such an incredible product. And wow. I'm so proud to say my wife did that and saved my life, saved my mouth. And she is the mother of all the people who are using a Vitamer toothpaste and mouthwash in the world.
Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Buy from the good guys at theparamol.com. That's theparamol.com.
Spring is here, and so are your allergies. That's why we have quercetin at a 15% discount, available at thepowermall.com. Quercetin, it's a potent antioxidant to support immunity and normal allergen response. Call 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Buy from the good guys. Buy from thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com. 15% off quercetin this month only at thepowermall.com.
Hi, this is Jay at the Power Mall. I thought I would discuss an item that's very valuable to my personal health and well-being. That product is called Curcumin X4000. Its potent antioxidant properties have been shown to decrease swelling and allow us to enjoy our golden years. Take control over your health today, guys. Order Curcumin by calling 877-817-9829 or order at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
We're talking to Steve Bias. He's really fun to talk to off air, on air too. Really pleasant. I love his accent. I grew up in the South, so this is very comfortable for me, for all you people not from the South. And it sounds like we're talking a little slower. Well, we're talking that a little slower for you, so you can understand where we come from. That's the Southern mentality. I'm just kidding. I'm going to get letters, Steve. Just kidding. His book, History's Greatest Libels, you can get wherever books are sold, certainly Amazon or different places. He teaches History's Greatest Libels. He teaches at Randall University. You know, he teaches constitutional law. Wow, amazing. He actually teaches the Constitution has a value, and it's about rights. And that, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, government's only purpose is to protect those things. Wow, what a revolutionary idea. Holy cow. Lock him up. He seems like a lunatic. Randall University, that sounds like an awful good place for your children to go to school. You know, if you want to maybe salvage any hope of that America means something to them, if they actually learn some logic and something worth listening to, maybe think about Randall University, ladies and gentlemen. Tell them Steve Bias sent you. Tell them the Power Hour sent you. The Randall University. The New American. That's, of course, we've had, many people on, from the New American. I can't think of the guy's name. Alex Newman. How did I ever get Alex Newman?
Alex Newman.
Yeah, Alex Newman comes on quite often. We love his work. And Steve's article there about America didn't invent slavery. They ended slavery. Is very important. We're going to get into that more. But all these things, check them out. Steve Bias, Randall University professor. I want to get a little bit into just his history. Now, you correct me where I'm wrong. As far as I know, the first slave, it's not even slaves is probably the wrong term. The first indentured servants were actually Irish, as far as I know, white slaves. That kind of didn't work out or whatever. They ran away or whatever. And then eventually, like you said, it started to transform. America, to me, seemed very resistant to slavery. That's when they came over here. They wanted to leave the slavery system that British was so fond of. You correct me, just kind of a hit, general history, wherever you want to start, 1619 on, and how we got to, the Declaration of Independence and this argument again.
Well, as time went on, and of course, it was a big moneymaker for British merchants to transport.
Let me interrupt. Yeah. I'm sorry. Why? I am so sick of people blaming America, and they're so hell bent on crucifying Thomas Jefferson about slavery, one of the most anti-slavery voices of the country. Why aren't they mad at the King and Queen of England? Why aren't they mad about Britain? Why don't they crucify them? Anyway, go ahead.
Well, that's a good question. Here again, one of the things you'll hear is people say things like, well, the British ended the slave trade in 1807. They ended slavery in the British Empire in 1833. And, of course, it ended in all states in the United States in 1865 with the 13th Amendment. That's one generation later that it ended in all of the United States. And yet, to hear people talk, you would think it was like 300 or 400 years later that the United States ended slavery. This was a movement brought on to end slavery by Western civilization. And Western, at its core, Western civilization is Christian. Okay, and so what you've got here is that slavery was really unquestioned. You didn't have people in the days of the Roman Empire or down in Africa or in Asia or anywhere else or in the South America. All of which had many times more slaves than the United States ever did. You didn't have anybody really that I know of that is recorded in history standing up and saying this is wrong, you know, or anything like that. It was in America. It was in the West. In the West generally, and America specifically, where the anti-slavery thing was the strongest. And so it was the British government, the British Empire, they made a lot of money off the transatlantic slave trade, and so did all the other places, the Spanish and the Portuguese and the French and so forth. And so it didn't originate in the colonies. That's just absurd. Slavery was goes back to the dawn of human history, and it existed in every culture and every continent, all over the world, and it was in what became the United States is where was the movement to end it began.
That is, let me underline what you just said, and exclamation point, and exclamation point, exclamation point. Samuel Adams, I don't know if he's the most, but he's certainly one of the most anti-slavery individuals. He is the father of the American Revolution. They call him the father of the American Revolution, Samuel Adams. The Declaration of Independence, Thomas Jefferson wrote a scathing indictment, one of the list of things that Britain did wrong, how they've wronged America. He wrote about slavery, that they basically forced the institution. They did. They forced the institution of slavery on America and eroded them morally in every way by doing this. That was Thomas Jefferson wrote that in the Declaration of Independence. Two of the states would not unanimously, they took it out because they needed unanimous consent. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong about any of that right there.
Yeah, it's all correct.
Okay, so.
All correct.
So.
And, you know, and I just think that it's ridiculous how people want to rag on Thomas Jefferson. You know, he wasn't perfect because there's only one perfect person ever lived, and we're all flawed. But at the same time, you know, you've heard of the Northwest Ordinance, created the Northwest Territory out of the lands that became like Michigan and Ohio and Wisconsin and so forth, Indiana, and so Virginia was one of the places that had a claim to some of that land. So these states, like Virginia, gave up their claims to the general government at the time of the Articles of Confederation period. And so it was Thomas Jefferson who insisted that before Virginia gave up its claim, that the Northwest Ordinance would include a provision that slavery would be forever banned in the Northwest Territory. That was Thomas Jefferson. Well, if you're going to criticize Thomas Jefferson for A, you need to praise him for B. You know, I mean, let's be real.
Also, there was a time when they were trying to vote, and they were, you know, he was one vote short in Virginia of getting eliminated completely. If correct me if I'm wrong, he was also the president in 1807 who ended the slave trade coming to America.
Absolutely, he signed the legislation, and that was 1 week after the slave trade was abolished in the British Empire. So there you go. They got us by 1 week. So
they did
1 week before the United States did it. So that's the way it goes.
Well, I think that's even absurd on its face also because, you know, as you know, but Britain is an empire. And so they had a colonial mindset. So this idea, oh, we're going to stop slavery in Britain proper. That doesn't mean they didn't have slavery in India or any of the other colonies that they still had. America just separated from them, so they didn't have America anymore. But they still had slavery. Correct me if I'm wrong. They had slavery all over the world.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Yeah. So this movement, as I'll just stress again, is that it was Western civilization that, and particularly America, that began the movement that culminated in the abolition of slavery. It did not originate in Africa, the Middle East, Asia, and Latin America. It originated in the English colonies of America. That's where the abolitionist movement started.
Please don't get me wrong, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not saying any of these things to justify slavery, to justify what happened, to justify, you know, any of those injustices. But don't then twist them and manipulate history. First, we got to unwind history before we can even have a sane discussion about it, I believe. So don't sit there and use these lies then to justify getting rid of the Declaration of Independence, which is in pretty much most people, intelligence people's estimation, probably the greatest moment in world history for about 2,000 years, probably is the Declaration of Independence. Take away anything I just said there, Steve.
No, it sounds real good. And one thing I do want to just kind of put a point on this is that in 1996, you remember we had the Olympics in Atlanta, Georgia.
Yes.
And the Olympic Committee was trying to decide before this where to hold the Olympics. And so members of the International Olympic Committee, some of them were from West Africa. And when they got to Atlanta, now the mayor of Atlanta at that time was Andrew Young, who was no conservative. He had worked for Jimmy Carter and as UN ambassador. He was pretty left wing, you know, in his politics. However, this group from Africa said they didn't know about awarding to Atlanta. Like anybody in Atlanta in the 90s had anything to do with slavery. But anyway, put that aside. They said, we don't know if we should do award, because they used to have slaves in Georgia. Some people from Africa. And Young said, yeah, but it was your ancestors that sold them. And that is absolutely correct. I would say pretty close to 100%. Of all the slaves that were brought across the Atlantic Ocean were sold by other African tribes.
We'll discuss that a little more. And that was, correct me if I'm wrong again, Britain came to some of these tribal leaders and said, we want slaves. You want guns? We'll give you guns, or we'll give you this, we'll give you whatever. They were more than happy to round up people and put them on those ships for them, if I'm mistaken.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They had so many slaves in Africa. They had a surplus, and they were either going to kill them or, you know, they didn't need all those slaves, and so they sold them to the Portuguese and the French and the British, the Spanish, and so that did, I guess, encourage more fighting and taking of slaves, and it was a. It was a great commerce for these West African tribes. The king of Dahomey in West Africa, he was mad when the British ended the slave trade. He said, that's the ruling principle of my people. It's the source and glory of their wealth. So they enjoyed it, you know. So, you know, if we're going to criticize people for slavery, let's criticize everybody that had a role in it.
Well, there's slavery right now. I mean, you can go to places, you know, Libya, Syria. There's places right now where people are being sold. Right now, today. Yeah. LeBron James wants to talk about slavery. Go in slavery right now, LeBron. I mean, if you want to start lecturing me about something my ancestor did 200 something years ago, my God.
Yeah. Well, of course, he seems to have a good spot in his heart for the Chinese communists who have over a million people in political prisoners, you know.
Yeah.
I think it's the same thing. It's economics, you know. It benefits him economically, so he's not going to say anything bad about the Chi-Coms.
Now, the South, you start getting the war for the war of Northern aggression, where you start to, well, the South was all about slavery, the North wasn't, the North was liberated, to me, that issue is so clouded, nobody can say that with any clarity to me. The North was freeing slaves, that's why they fought the South. To me, that's ridiculous. Do you agree with me there? That's not even true.
It is ridiculous. The war absolutely was not fought to end slavery. It's kind of one of those things that because slavery came to an end, people presume the war was fought to end slavery. It was a consequence of the war after 4 years, but it was, Lincoln said that he was not fighting to free the slaves, and Congress passed a resolution that they were not supporting the war to end the slaves. They were. It was all to force these southern states back into the Union. That was what the war was about, period.
Well, and also, correct me if I'm wrong, Lincoln went to the southern states as they're thinking about seceding, say, look, if you don't secede, you stay with us, we will pass a 13th Amendment that basically guarantees that we will not interfere with any of your state institutions. If you want slavery in your states, America will not say anything about it. Is that true or not?
That is true, that Congress was poised to pass what it would have been the 13th Amendment was to protect the institution of slavery in the South, but that was by that time, I guess, the southern states. There were other things that caused the southern states to want to leave, which, you could get into a whole different discussion there. But
yeah, we don't want to solve the war, the Civil War. The war we don't have
the
that kind
between
of time.
The states or whatever you want to call it. It's just a deal where this whole race thing is kind of to me, it's anti-Christian because it's teaching people to hate groups of people simply because of their skin color, which is, that's as sorry a thing as what the Ku Klux Klan did. It's just this building up hatred when we should, we should be looking at people as individuals.
Well, we should be unifying between the greatest governmental principle ever codified into law and put down on paper is the Declaration of Independence and Constitution, specifically the Bill of Rights. That's my opinion. I think it's clear. I don't even think anybody has a contrary argument to it. To me, that has any validity. I don't know what you think.
Frederick Douglass, who was one of the great black abolitionists, a former slave, he said the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence were liberty documents. So his words contradict what people say today.
Where the Spirit of God is, there is liberty. That's the scripture. So there you go. The greatest governmental force to protect the Spirit of God came from the pen of Thomas Jefferson and the Founding Fathers and the war that they fought against the British. Period. End of story. That's what gets me so mad about this, is that is trying to get lost and buried in the story here. And I refuse to have it lost. For people who didn't grow, you're in Oklahoma. I grew up in the South. I had family. I had family that, to let you know, were part Indian. Native American in Cherokee. And there was a time in America that people would say that they were black instead of Indian. Like if the census came around, they'd say, no, I'm black. I'm not Indian. Because Indians couldn't own land. Blacks could own land at some point in America. I don't know if people know that. So they give you a little bit of idea, the South that I know kind of family. So I, grew up in the 70s, 80s, whatever. I would visit my family, and you see these rows, unless you see this, ladies and gentlemen, this is 100+ years after the war between the states. But still, 100+ years later, until you see the rows and rows of that frickin' corn, of that frickin' tobacco, and the cotton coming up, and you see this, the little shacks, little more than shacks all around, and the, one step up from sharecropping, one generation from a sharecropping system. It's, I'm 100 years removed from it. Plus, you can still feel it. And unless you see that and feel that, it's kind of hard to understand the South. And so for people 200 years later to just wave a magic wand and say, hey, the South is terrible. It's awful what they did. We need to erase this and they should end the slavery and God, damn them to hell for what they've done and blah, blah, blah. It's not fair at all. I don't think. Please comment on that in perspective, from the Southern point of view.
Well, It's one of the mythologies is that the South was just one plantation after another, with these huge homes and all this kind of stuff. But the truth of the matter is, it's just sort of like today, people live in really huge homes, like some of those Hollywood actors that are so pompous and everything. They live in giant homes. I don't know about you, but I don't live in a giant home like they do. I don't live in a home like Al Gore, who spends on electricity more in a week than I do in a year, which that's another topic. But the thing is, at that time, most people were just farmers. They didn't own any slaves. I've read the Confederate soldiers, around 5% of the Confederate soldiers owned slaves. So they obviously were not fighting for slavery. That's pretty absurd. It's just sort of like anything else. If people invaded the United States right now, you wouldn't be fighting for your car or something like that. You'd be fighting to get those people out of there. And you can argue about what was right or wrong, but certainly they were not fighting for slavery. I have 9 ancestors, direct ancestors that were Confederate soldiers, and none of them owned slaves, none of the 9. So it's just kind of an absurd proposition that people believe that all those Confederate soldiers were going into a hail of bullets so some guy down the road could own a slave.
It's absurd.
It makes no sense.
It's absurd. It's even more absurd. Okay, even today. Okay, if I said somebody from the North needs to leave their home, conscript in the army, risk their life, and come down and go somewhere else in some part of America and free them, they wouldn't do it. They won't even do it. They can go right now to Liberia, Libya, and Syria. They can go do it right now if they want. They're not doing it.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. Tell this idea, I think people need to understand also that at some point, the South, Britain, you correct me if I'm wrong, Britain forced the slavery system upon American colonies, specifically Virginia, tobacco, what have you. It exploded with the cotton and what have you, where slavery, the institution of slavery, the culture, and the economic factors of it all intertwined into one to where, like you said, you can't get the cream out of coffee once you stir it. It's not like snapping your fingers. Even Thomas Jefferson debated this. Okay. The plan was, all right, let's free them all tomorrow. What happens? And even Thomas Jefferson was hesitant. Like, no, I don't know if we can even do that because it's going to cause too many problems. Talk about that. Am I right about any of that? Your perspective.
Well, that was one of the bad, one of the things that you know, once you say A, you got to say B. What's going to happen once you throw the millions of people who have no skills other than, you know, working in the farm, you're going to throw them out to the wolves, so to speak, you know, and it was a terrible economic situation at the end of slavery. John Randolph, who was a cousin of Thomas Jefferson, and he inherited his plantation, and he didn't have any full siblings, you know, that to share it with. And so he, as I said before, he inherited a plantation with all these debts. And at some point, he came to believe that slavery was something he did not want to be a slave owner. So he couldn't just free him. So what he did is he worked really, really hard to get rid of all his debts. And near the end of his life, he wrote out a will that these slaves would be taken care of. He wanted them out of Virginia because he didn't feel like they would ever be treated well enough in Virginia. So he got them some land in Ohio. And they went up to Ohio, and it's a long, long story, but to make a long story short, in the free state of Ohio, they basically, the people there cheated them out of their land, you know, and that Randolph had worked so hard for him to get. And I think he was in court till 1917, over 100 years, you know, litigation. Wow. Involved in it. But at the end of the day, they didn't get their land that Randolph had left for them in Ohio.
Wow.
It was not as easy as some people say today. Well, and I hear people say things like this, and you have too. They say, well, if I had to live back then, I would have just freed my slaves. And I said, well, would you have been penniless? Would have been willing to be penniless? And they go, well, you know, and they kind of hem-haw around. And I said, you know, you won't do something that costs you a dollar today, you know,
yeah.
Out of some moral principle. So you think you would do that, you know, and it's a lot more difficult when you're in that situation. It was a bad deal, the whole slavery thing.
Hold on a sec. Stop right there.
America didn't start it.
Turn that music down, Todd. You got about 30 seconds. Just overall, please hit the point home that the anti-slavery abolition really started in America and really gained force with the Declaration of Independence, not instituted by the Declaration of Independence. Give them time, Todd. Give them time.
The Declaration of Independence was the foundation for the abolition of slavery, pure and simple.
Well, there you go. You didn't even need all that 30 seconds. My God. Steve Bias, the book History's Greatest Libels, Randall University. Check it out. You want your children to learn this kind of information. It's a pleasure. The NewAmerican.com is article. Absolute pleasure to be with you, Steve. Stay there. Ladies and gentlemen, we want you happy, healthy, successful, and free as God intends you to be. You've been listening to the Power Hour. God bless you. Till next time.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.